Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by...
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. Some fathers get to know their daughter's love interest by inviting him or her over for dinner. Other dads go straight to Google. Amelia Blanquera's father preferred the latter. Danielle Brooks, best known as Tasty on the Netflix series Orange is the New Black, reads Amelia's essay about that rustle in the bushes.
When my sister, Ardell, first told me about the binder, I could feel my body tense. A younger version of me would have immediately dialed my father and confronted him, because who would believe that my 77-year-old father Google stalks my boyfriends and keeps a binder of his salvaged details and opinions for reference? But years of therapy taught me to wait 10 seconds before automatically exploding with anger. So, in this case, I was able to keep cool long enough to decide to bring it up later with him in person. If you were to look up the term helicopter parenting in the Wikipedia of my life, you would see a picture of my parents. They would be the ones in the Huey, the ominous military chopper used in the Vietnam War. Noisy and clunky, my parents made their presence known. In my childhood house, they read mail addressed to my siblings and me, rummaged through drawers and opened doors without knocking. It was the norm for them to be invasive, and their lack of respect for privacy annoyed me. Although my siblings weren't as forthcoming with my parents about their lives, I always told them the truth. It took me a while to figure out that they didn't want a true retelling of events, but the one that fit the fiction of how they thought my life should be. My parents were more attuned to the upbeat experiences. The rough patches were harder for them to process. Not long after I learned about the binder, my father asked about the man I was then dating, a newscaster. I decided to play it cool, to see if he would come clean about it. That guy was all over the media. My father didn't need to look very hard to find him. Later, when visiting my parents for the holidays, my father asked, "Did you know he used to be married?" "I used to be married too," I said. "Yes, but you have no idea why he got divorced," my father tried to prod me for more information. But the newscaster had told me what I needed to know, and that was good enough for me. By the way, I asked, moving closer to where he was sitting at his desk, "how do you know he was divorced?" "It's all on the internet," he said innocently, smiling as if to diffuse the mounting tension. Our dynamic has always been tumultuous. We argue a lot. Men in the past have told me I have a tone that's sarcastic and mocking, a tone that broadcasts to the receiver, "I think you're an idiot." My mother doesn't have this voice. I must mimic my father. "I know about the binder, Dad," I finally said. "Ardell told me. Show it to me." "What? I don't know what you're talking about," he said. "Ardell told me that you have a binder with information on the people I've dated." He squirmed, but offered no confession. Did he believe he wasn't doing anything wrong? I was calling his bluff. "Do I need to ask Mom?" I said. To their credit, my parents act as a unit. Even if one of them has a wacky idea, they always back each other up. "Mom, can you show me the binder?" I shouted into the other room. Did you ask your father? She shouted back. I don't know what you're talking about. It was obvious she knew. She's a terrible liar. I looked at my father. He smirked a bit and then blurted out, How am I going to protect you? Although he is physically agile and mentally acute for a senior citizen, he is not in any shape to be a vigilante on my behalf. His worldview, too, is a bit skewed. He delights in news stories about corruption, scandals, and suspicious activities. Something about doomsday movies placates him, whereas my mother used to take my siblings and me to see the latest Disney film, my father sat with us in front of the television to watch Soylent Green and Blade Runner, among others. If the apocalypse came, he wanted us to be ready. With my father's mentoring, I understood that the world wasn't cuddly and charming, but dark and sinister. It wasn't that my father was trying to frighten or upset my siblings and me. Rather, I think he was showing us through the movies never to accept life at face value. As an adult, I chose sunny and sweet. It just seemed less anxiety-provoking that way. I eyeballed the room to see if my father had the audacity to keep my dating binder on the shelf with his other records. He kept files on all his doctors. Each 2-inch plastic binder was labeled with the physician's name written on surgical tape with a black Sharpie marker. Other than details about my father's specific ailments, each doctor's binder contained a printout of whatever personal and professional information my father could assemble. If nothing else, he was a meticulous record keeper, but he wouldn't give up my binder. "So you're not going to let me see it?" I asked. I don't know what you're talking about. If my father hadn't become an engineer, he would have made a great spy. He tried to contain his obsessive worry after I left for college, but every so often he would show up and there it would be again. Like the time he visited my Brooklyn apartment and insisted on buying me electrical outlet covers as if I were still an infant who might stick a fork into the socket. His concerns abated when I was married because there was another person to worry about me. But his protective instincts came back in triple strength after I was divorced. In the moment, here's what I knew. He had a binder. My mother denied it. My sister had seen it, yet my father wouldn't confess because he knew his actions were overstepping my boundaries. Did he really think I couldn't take care of myself? That offended me. In years past, his constant second-guessing had escalated into blowouts. Our shouting matches had made us both feel terrible afterward. So this time around, I wasn't going to let it reach that level. I knew I could take care of myself. Even if some of my previous relationships hadn't worked out, I still trusted my judgment. I was willing to take on the risk. My father just needed to tell me the truth about the binder. "Well, if you're going to keep a file on him," I said, "at least let me help you pick out the articles." My father turned on his computer, and we scrolled through various articles written by the newscaster. Not a Google stalker myself. I had never seen what came up. His writing was informative and smart. The video clip showed his sense of humor. There definitely was enough material for a private investigator to find this guy. He was hiding in plain sight. At this point, I thought my father would crack, but he stubbornly held his ground. Obviously, this was his attempt to reinsert some control into my world, even if he wasn't around to witness it. I thought I could handle a small bit of intrusion. We just needed to negotiate an understanding. "You can research the men I'm dating," I offered, "but I don't want you to tell me what you find unless the guy has a criminal record. I'd like to know that, but nothing else." "Okay," he said, turning back to his computer. He was doing his best to hide his anxiety, but all the sighing and loud typing betrayed him. His fears were something he would need to learn to manage for himself. And then I felt something I hadn't before regarding his overbearing ways. Tenderness. It felt oddly comforting to know that my father has my back in his paranoid way. Since I don't have children, I asked my brother Arturo what he thought. As the parent of two pre-teenage daughters, would he behave in the same way? I think my need to control their lives will diminish as they age, he said. But it might gain in resurgence as I age. Then he offered this sanguine observation. At least he's trying to stay in touch and be involved, albeit in a covert manner. True. So, I've decided not to fight it anymore. But I intend to warn any love interest not to post anything on my Facebook wall because my personal, private investigator is only a click away, and anything suspicious is likely to go on his permanent record.
Danielle Brooks, reading Amelia Blanquera's essay, About That Rustle in the Bushes. We asked Danielle why she chose Amelia's essay, and it turns out that she's experiencing some parental input in her own love life.
I'm at that age where my mother is dying for a grandchild and for me to also walk down that aisle. So I just felt this was the perfect story for where I am in my mid-20s.
You can see Danielle Brooks in season 5 of Orange is the New Black and in season 2 of Master of None. They're both streaming on Netflix. There's more in a moment.
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
I'm Emily Badger. I'm a reporter with the New York Times. Since the pandemic, empty office buildings have become much more common in many cities. Why can't we just turn them into housing?
It's actually a really complicated question.
To answer this question, you have to find a developer trying to turn an office building into apartments. Ride a rickety elevator to the 30th floor of a construction site to see the interior guts of a building. Finds an expert in incandescent light bulbs who can explain to you how they fundamentally change office buildings. And that's just the beginning of what you have to do. When you subscribe to the New York Times, you are sending reporters like me out into the world to ask questions of dozens of different experts, to go and visit places most people don't get to go, to try to come back with answers, and then turn all of that into something that anyone can understand. If you'd like to become a subscriber, head to nytimes.com/subscribe. You need to see the animated floor plans in this piece.
We're back. It's Modern Love, the podcast. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Now, this is usually where we hear from the author who wrote the story you just heard. But we're very sad to say that Amelia Blanquera died unexpectedly in March due to complications from hypertension. She was just 47 years old. However, her father Arturo and sister Ardell agreed to tell us more about Amelia, and they were thrilled to hear that her modern love piece was being shared on the podcast.
I think she would have been really excited and really pleased that her work was being valued.
That's Ardell, who told us that writing was actually Amelia's third career. She worked in publishing and then spent 12 years as a lawyer before enrolling in Columbia's MFA nonfiction program.
Writing was so fulfilling to her, and she was just a very generous student and a very just generous human being, and was very thoughtful in the classroom.
Amelia also taught workshops and led student writing groups at Columbia and NYU.
And all of her students have been able to send us condolences on what a sharing spirit she had. And she created this atmosphere within the classroom that enabled people to feel vulnerable and to feel safe in sharing their writing.
Amelia knew this vulnerability well. Her modern love piece was one of many personal essays she had published. She didn't show the essay to her father before exposing his Google stalking ways to millions of readers, but Arturo didn't deny a word of it.
I know more than she knows about her dates because I Googled them when they went to school. I'm really a protective father, see?
Arturo is 84 years old and lives in Florida with Amelia's mother, Floridalis. He no longer has Amelia's binder, but he does still have the ones he created on his son's wives.
Yeah. But they don't know it. They don't know it.
Well, now they do, Dad.
Now they don't.
Dad, don't you think it's a little bit crazy to actually create like a dossier on every single person that your children has ever dated or had a romantic interest in?
Well, I'm just checking out if they are okay, see. If you are in love, you use your heart, but you don't use your mind, see. So I have to be behind you. I have to be like a backup, see.
Thanks, Dad.
You just make your decision, that's all.
Amelia did the deciding for herself in her own life, from romance to career to travel. She spent time in Brazil, Spain, and the Philippines, where her family is from. In Brooklyn, she became deeply involved in her community garden and in the Brooklyn Queens Land Trust. She used her law degree to create a sustainable legal structure for the organization.
And that sort of combination of her love of gardening and her legal background and the writing was culminating in a proposal for a book that she had had a working title of Citizen Gardener. And it was about the fight to save New York City's community gardens from development.
Citizen Gardener was Amelia's thesis project at Columbia. Ardell accepted Amelia's MFA on her behalf last month, and she's working with Amelia's professors to find a way to finish the project. Arturo told us that Amelia's wide network of students, classmates, and gardeners has made the impact of her loss even greater.
Amelia will be remembered by so many people. She's happy contributing and helping others. And I learned a lot from her. You must give back to other people too. That's what she said. Because that will make you happy.
I miss her laugh. I miss her advice. I miss her wit. And I keep wanting to continue on her work and her spirit.
I'm very grateful to have her as my daughter and me and my wife. We love her and we miss her so much.
Arturo Blanquera, father of Amelia Blanquera. We also heard from Amelia's sister, Ardell Jala. You can see pictures of Amelia and her family on our website, wbur.org/modernlove. We'll hear from Daniel Jones after the break.
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
My name is Thomas Gibbsneff. I'm a journalist at the New York Times. I served in the Marine Corps as an infantryman. When it comes to reporting on the front line, a lot of the same basics are at play. You're looking at the map of where you're going. If you're on a paved road, field roads, you know, is there a hospital nearby? Is your body armor affixed with the first aid kit? Does everyone know where that first aid kit is? We arrive into a military position. I get out of the car. I look at my watch. You know, I set a timer, no more than an hour. I'm listening for drones, jets, check in with the team. Is everyone comfortable? And if they are, then we proceed. Frontline reporting is dangerous, but I think nothing is more important than talking to the people involved, you know, hearing their stories and being able to connect that with people thousands of miles away. Anything that can make something like this more personal, I think, is well worth the risk. New York Times subscribers make it possible for us to keep doing this vital coverage. If you'd like to subscribe, you can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
As editor of the Modern Love column for the New York Times, Daniel Jones gets to know these stories inside out. But news of Amelia's sudden passing gave him a different perspective on her essay.
It's tempting to look at an essay that's taken from a life as this complete piece, but they aren't complete pieces, and the lives go on and things change. And this is a piece that just takes on a whole new meaning and a whole new resonance and just a tragic level of how protective love can really only go so far. You know, you can't. It's just such a parent's nightmare to think you've launched your children out into the world and you have to let go of them. And you think, oh, they're going to be okay. Everybody's going to be okay. That's just the way that it works out. And it really just hollows you out to think of this story in that context of a father who cared so deeply and tried so hard, you know, to have it end this way. It really, really affects you.
Modern Love is a production of The New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Jessica Elpert, John Perotti, and Amory Sievertson. Additional sound design this week by Matt Reed. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for The New York Times and advisor to the show. Music for the podcast, courtesy of APM. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.